This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Thank you very much and good evening. I'm interested to know how you would define a hero. David, how would you define a hero? What would you think a hero is, if I were to ask you? What is a hero?
Hero.
What's wrong?
You know.
Is the woman behind a successful man.
You're well trained, well trained, well conditioned.
It's a man that can control his yetzer.
You're quoting like a rabbi now. I'm asking you to think. It's a good definition. Let's look at a different one.
A South African that can win a gold medal at the Olympics.
That's a miracle maker. That's a miracle maker. I think a hero is a person who lives the values that the rest of us can only aspire to. When we see somebody doing what we admire, then to us that person is a hero. And you, ladies and gentlemen, are heroes. Because being heroic is not about having good values. Being heroic is about being willing to pay the price of good values. Being willing, and I don't mean just a financial price, the price of giving up your time, of your energy, to believe in charity. I've interviewed thousands and thousands of people in dozens of different cultures all around the world, including criminals in jails. I haven't yet found anybody who has bad values. Every single individual I've interviewed on the subject has good values. They believe in good things. The difference between people is just the willingness to stand up for the things they believe in when it entails a price, when things are tough. And that's why I say you're heroes. You're certainly my heroes, and I feel very honored and privileged to be among you this evening. But philanthropy is more than just a value. Philanthropy, charity, is a defining quality of a Jewish person. The Rambam Maimonides says, it's a siman letzadik mizera Avraham Avinu. That means that generosity is an indication of a Jewish DNA inherited from Abraham. I'm not just talking about day-to-day generosity. I'm talking about significant generosity. That's something very, very Jewish. It's something inherently Jewish. That doesn't mean that there aren't many non-Jews who are enormously generous, but selfless generosity is a quality that the Jewish people taught the world many, many years ago, and still remains very much a Jewish quality. The government of Ontario, Canada, was absolutely staggered to discover on the tax returns of the Canadian population that the charitable contributions, because in the United States and Canada everything is tax deductible, so the government sees how much people are giving away to charity. The charitable contributions of a small area, a few square miles in size, in Toronto, gives more charity than the rest of Canada. And it's an area of very middle class and lower middle class Jewish people, but just enormously charitable. And they can segment it there by area, which they do. So that's something that really defines a Jewish person. Charity is not just one of the things a Jew does. Charity is the very essence of being Jewish. And again, the Rambam Maimonides says charity is the mitzvah that one has to be most meticulous about. Of all the mitzvahs in the Torah, and they're all very, very important. We know about Shabbat, and we know about Kashrut, and we know about Yom Kippur, and we know about lighting candles on Friday night, all the good things that Jewish people have made sacrifices for. But Maimonides says, of all of them, charity is the thing one has to be most meticulous about. Now, I want to look at charity and try and understand it even a little bit beyond that. You know, I find it quite interesting that we talk about life insurance. What does life insurance mean? It doesn't really mean life insurance, does it? Accident insurance means you get paid if you have an accident. Life insurance should mean that you get paid if you live. But it doesn't. It's really death insurance. Isn't that right? They just don't want to call it death insurance, because who would buy it if you call it death? Health insurance. It's not health insurance. It's sickness insurance. You get paid when you're sick, not when you're healthy. sickness insurance, there's death insurance, there's no life insurance. There's no life insurance because you cannot insure life. Or can you? The Torah says, "V'hatzdaka tatzil mimavet." Charity saves from death. There is life insurance. You can invest in life. You can invest in life with philanthropy. And let's try and understand that. What does that mean? We can understand that in three dimensions. The first dimension I would like to look at is just a law of justice. It's just a law of the universe. The second is, it's a law in quantum physics. And the third is, it's a law of divine protection. Why is it a law of nature, just a law of natural justice? A friend of mine is a rabbi who heads up a wonderful institution in Israel, doesn't take a salary from it, does it voluntarily, and came to the United States to try and raise some money for his institution, and after years managed to get an appointment with a very powerful American philanthropist. And he goes up to the 68th floor of the philanthropist's building, gets ushered into the plush offices, and eventually waits a little while. The philanthropist calls him in, very big, well-known businessman, invites him to sit down, offers him a cup of coffee, and invites him to tell his story. And my friend, the rabbi, understands he's got a few minutes to make this worthwhile. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He's either going to make it or he's not. And he tells the story of his institution with a lot of passion and a lot of empathy, and really engages the businessman. He's listening intently, and at the end of it, he sits back and he says, "I'm impressed with the work you're doing, and I would like to support it. I'm going to leave a legacy for your institution in my will." And the rabbi figures there's now only a few seconds to save this dying situation. And he turns to the philanthropist and he says, "Do you know why we Jews don't eat pork? We eat cows, at least some of us do. We eat sheep, we eat chicken." He says, "Because we benefit from cows every day. They give us milk. Lambs give us wool. Chickens give us eggs. But the pig leaves it all in his will. He gives us no benefit at all in his lifetime. When he dies, we have him all. Every bit of him is used, but nothing in his lifetime. Sir," he said, "I don't want to benefit from your flesh. I want your milk." And he got the money. And that's what philanthropy is. It's nourishing life. It's taking of your own vitality, your own sweat and blood. What is your money? Your money is what you've worked for what you've thought, your intellect, your mind, your energy, your labor, converted into hard-earned money. And taking that money to empower and facilitate the lives of other people, that's life-giving. That's the kind of thing God does. That's superhuman. To give life to other people. That's the nourishment. Money is the milk of life. And to be able to take that and nourish other human beings, it's only just that the outcome of providing life is gaining life. It's a law of the universe. Provide life, you gain life. You nourish, you're nourished. That's the way it works. From the point of view of quantum physics, you've all heard of these laws that they're beginning to discover now, the laws of abundance and the laws of attraction and all these fancy laws, which really work out very simply. And that is, when we do things, we put out certain energy in the world that comes back to us. Just does that. That's the way the world is designed. That's the way the universe is designed. Generosity brings abundance. It just does. You might remember, Clive, the other evening when we were together at another event, there was a black gentleman there, businessman, and I made a comment about the United States saying that never in the history of mankind has there been a country so generous as the United States. Now, there are lots of silly things the United States does, but there are a lot of wonderful things that the United States does, and one has to be very careful not to ignore those things. There has never been a country in the history of mankind that has been so generous in countless different ways, and I'll tell you some of them. But this black gentleman commented and he said, "Well, they can afford it." And I said, "Excuse me. They can afford it because they're generous, not the other way around. Wealthy people are wealthy because they're generous. They're not generous because they're wealthy. There are lots of people who are not wealthy who are generous, and there are lots of people who are wealthy who are not generous. But wealth follows generosity. It's not the people who start off ungenerous don't become generous when they become wealthy. A person is generous whether or not he's got. Each one on their own level, generous with their time, generous with their knowledge, generous with information. Generosity is not a function of how much money you have. Generosity is a function of what kind of a human being you are. And America is a generous nation. I say again, they do many silly things, but they're an exceptionally generous nation. And generosity underpins the American business model. Generosity underpins the American social model. Generosity underpins the American political model. They believe implicitly, religiously, spiritually, commercially, economically, financially, that generosity attracts abundance. In the end, it comes back to you. I could never understand when I got there. They have these networking evenings. I don't know if you have them here. People want to make connections in business, and so they have a networking evening. And I used to ask, how can it possibly work? If everybody's there looking for business, then you're all just going to each other looking for business. Well, who's supplying the business? It just doesn't make sense to me. And they explained it to me. They said, you don't get it. You don't go to a network evening to find out what business you can get. You go to a networking evening for one purpose only. That's to find out who you can help. That's what you do at a networking business. How can I help you? What business are you in? Perhaps I've got a contact I can introduce you to. Because the belief is, help the others, you'll get helped eventually too. That's the American business model. I'll give you another example of American abundance. I don't think people realize the miracle of America as far as Israel is concerned. There's no question that Israel's survival is a miracle. There is no economic, political, or any other explanation for how this country survives. It just doesn't make any sense. Nobody's been able to explain it to me. And one of the things that's difficult to understand, we were discussing it briefly, Chuck, is why America supports Israel. Well, one of the reasons America supports Israel is not because they need the Jewish vote. It's because they need the Christian vote. The Christian community has sustained Israel during very difficult times, but in vast amounts, not only of money, but also of moral support. And it doesn't matter what the reason is. When it comes to generosity, there's just a generosity of spirit. My brother was invited to speak to a church group in Texas. So he does quite a lot of speaking. So he called them before and he said, I'm just busy preparing the speech. Give me an idea of how many people will be there. So they said 100,000. He said, no, I mean not on television. How many will actually be at the venue? They said, no, on television there'll be 4 million, 100,000 at the venue. He said, oh. So he arrives there and it's organized like Disneyland, the parking, and you park your car in 2 minutes and then you get onto a bus and 5 minutes later you're in the venue, just beautifully organized. And it's in one of these huge arenas. 100,000 Christian faithful people come for a service or whatever. And he described the service and the commitment, and he notices as he's sitting on the dais there are a whole lot of other dignitaries there apart from he who's the guest speaker, and among them are two Orthodox rabbis. And now he's completely intrigued. How do they get here? What are they doing here? And he can't speak to them, so things have already gotten going. So he waits patiently to find out, and eventually he gets a sense of what's going on because the pastor gets up. And the pastor starts off by saying to the 100,000 people there, do you love Israel? And they all say, yes. He said, no. We are wildly passionate about Israel. Let me ask you again, do we love Israel? Yes, 100,000 people screaming. You don't find that at an IUA campaign, that really, do you? And then he says, how many of you have been to Israel? This was when the Intifada was at its height. How many of you have been to Israel? This is in the last 12 months. And everybody puts up their hands. He says, how many of you have been to Israel twice in the last 12 months? And about half put up their hands. He says, my friends, Israel is in trouble. You go twice or three times when they're in trouble, not once. The American Jews weren't going to Israel. They were pulling their kids back. They were running. They weren't going to Israel. The Christians were going. It's weird. It's unbelievable. And then he says, in fact, my wife and I, we've been going 3 or 4 times the last year to support Israel and encourage them. And on the way back, my wife was flying separately from me. And next to her, there was sitting a rabbi, who's Rabbi so-and-so, who's here. And he was telling her about the work he's doing. She was so impressed. She invited him to join us this evening. And I would like to offer him a very small gesture of our appreciation of the work he does with underprivileged children in Israel, calls him up and gives him an envelope. And Rabbi so-and-so, I met him when I was in Israel. This is somebody I know too. And want to give him also, tells a little bit about the work he's doing, would like to give him a gesture of our appreciation, and then he calls my brother up to speak. Afterwards, when they're having coffee, my brother corners the two rabbis and says, what was in the envelope? The one says $300,000, and the other one said $1 million. Okay, that's generosity. That's Christians, not Jews, for Israel. We've got to look at ourselves. And we've got to realize where our friends are and what generosity really means and what the scales of generosity are. And one of you mentioned, I think it might have been you, Jeff, earlier, that it's really important for other people to be at an occasion like this so that you mix with others and realize it's okay to give. People are giving. It's normal. It's not an abnormal thing. It's a normal thing to give. And it has to become a normal thing to give. One needs to speak about it. It's something that younger people need to realize too. It's normal. It's the thing that Jews do. And as I'm saying, certainly not only Jews. It's a thing that's done by civilized people throughout society now. And that's the American system. Generosity attracts abundance. Someone understands why Hatzdakah Tatzil Mimavet. Mavet, death doesn't only mean physical death. Death means financial death too. And again, the Rambam says, nobody will ever become poor or attract any form of damage through giving money away. Doesn't happen. It's a promise from Maimonides. You don't get poor from giving. You get poor from not giving. Counterintuitive, but it's a principle that quantum physics has begun to understand. And then the last one is the area of divine protection. Real life insurance. And here I'll tell you another story that happened. I found myself at a wedding in Los Angeles, and I don't even know quite how I got there. It was a strange story. I didn't know the bride, and I didn't know the groom. I didn't know their families. It was just a strange story. And I'm sitting down wondering why I'm there. And next to me is a man, crippled, crutches, and we begin to talk. His name was Mr. Zwebner. Do you remember there used to be a rabbi, Zwebner? Who was to be a rabbi in Rhodesia a long time ago, and then he was a rabbi in Emerentia, I think, in Johannesburg. This was a cousin of his. And I asked him about his crutches, and he was a polio child. We talked a little more about that. And then he tells me the following story. He was at a fundraiser, and he decided he was going to help them raise significant money. He thought they were playing around with small amounts. And again, in the States, it's never small amounts because they believe in abundance and generosity. It's always big amounts. But he thought it wasn't big enough. And the organizer said to him, no, don't worry. This, in fact, isn't a fundraiser as such. It's something like this. It's a dinner we're giving in recognition of people who've already given vast amounts of money. Don't have to raise the money here. These are people who give. He said, no, I would like to have a shot at raising even more. I don't think they're giving enough. And so he got onto the stage and his crutches. And he said to the audience, do you know what tzedakah tatzil mimavet means? Charity saves from death. What does it mean? Anybody explain it? Can anybody explain it? And everybody gave their own little interpretations. He says, no, it means that literally. And let me tell you the story. So he begins to tell the story to this large audience of very wealthy people. It happened not long before, where he was walking on his crutches at JFK Airport, and he then telescoped his crutches and put them in his suitcase. A woman saw that and came up to him and said, my goodness, I need crutches like that for my son. That would save his life. I didn't know you could get them. You could pack them up in a suitcase, that's just perfect. He says, no problem, you get them in the UK, and I'm on my way to the UK. Give me your card, and I'll get a pair for your son, and I'll bring it back. She's delighted, gives him his card, and off he goes to the UK, does his business, orders the crutches, packs them in his case, gets ready to go to Heathrow to return to the United States. His wife and family were living in the UK at that time. I think he's divorced. he's at Heathrow with his business partner, and he gets up to the desk. He says he always tries to get to the airport very early because it takes him a long time to manage. And she says to him, you know, you're early enough to get the earlier flight to New York, and there's space on the flight. If you want to, I'll put you guys on the earlier flight. He says, no, it's not worth it. The business partner says, come on, we can get to New York a few hours earlier. We can get some sleep before our meetings. Let's go for it. He says, I know to rush for this plane. He says, don't worry, I'll carry you. I'll do whatever. We're going, says the business partner. So they get put onto the earlier flight. He's walking along these escalators and things, and his crutch gets caught on the escalator and breaks. Now he's in a mess. He can't walk. He can't do anything. He says, right, now we're going back, and we'll get ourselves onto the later flight, which we were originally booked on. The business partner's already set his heart on getting to New York early. He says, no ways, I'll carry you. And don't forget, you've got a spare crutch in the suitcase. So when you get to New York, I'll take care of you until there. When you get to New York, you'll open your suitcase. You'll pull out the crutches. We'll order another set for the lady. We'll have it FedExed. And she'll have, in a few days' time, she'll have the set of crutches. It's not a big deal. And he says, that's a good idea. So the younger guy carries this gentleman, literally carries him to the plane. They rush to get the plane. They sit down. Off they go to New York. He gets to New York, opens his suitcase, gets the crutches out, goes off to his hotel, and phones his wife in London. There's silence on the phone. She says, we're sitting shiver. The Pan Am flight that went down in Lockerbie, you were on that. He said, no, I was on the flight earlier. Had I not taken the crutches for that lady that I happened to meet at JFK, I would have been on that flight. Hatzdaka tatzil mimavet. We don't always know how, but charity saves from death. We don't know when we come close to death. We only know when tragedy hits. We don't know when tragedy nearly hits. We go through our lives oblivious to what could happen or could have happened. And constantly we're subjected to those dangers. There is life insurance. You can insure your life with philanthropy. It's the cheapest form of insurance that there is. It brings vitality. It sustains. And it insures. That's just the way the world is designed. That's how God built the world. And so, ladies and gentlemen, apart from encouraging you to be ever more generous than you ever have before, because you know how to do that and it comes naturally to you, that doesn't mean it's not a sacrifice. Of course it's a sacrifice. But that's a sacrifice you know how to do. And I do ask that you do more than you've ever done before. But more than that. That you don't satisfy yourselves with what you're doing. Because you know what? Giving charity is important for the recipients. But it's more important for you. A wise rabbi was asked in the Midrash, if God wants us to support poor people, why did he create them? And the rabbi answered, because more than the cow, than the calf needs to drink, the cow needs to feed. There is a greatness, there is a richness in being able to give and in giving that is far more precious than the receiving. And yes, what you do for the receivers is enormous. But don't lose sight of what the receivers do for you. In enabling you to give and enabling you to express that generosity and enabling you to ensure your lives, ensure your emotional lives, your spiritual lives, and your physical lives. But don't hold that secret to yourselves. Let other people in on it. Don't be the only ones to give. Go out there and create coalitions of collaboration. People who contribute the way you do. People who learn the value of tzedakah. People who learn the value of philanthropy. Not just the value to the communities and to Israel, but the values to themselves. And co-opt people who can help save our communities, who can help support our land, and who at the same time will ensure their own lives. Thank you and good evening.